This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
Yesterday, Governor Tony Evers signed a new bipartisan bill aimed at bolstering flood prevention in Wisconsin. It's called the Pre-Disaster Flood Resilience Grant Program, and it invests in restoring and protecting wetlands, which make communities more flood resilient. This comes after historic flooding throughout the state last spring that led Governor Evers to declare a state of emergency. According to our next guest, the United States is in a flooding crisis, with floods occurring with greater frequency and intensity. In his new book, he says it will require creative solutions working with nature instead of against it. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you dealt with flooding in your community lately? Were you affected by major floods in the past? Have you moved because of concerns about flooding? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tim Palmer is a writer, photographer, former land use planner, and river conservation advocate. He's the author of more than 30 books about the environment. Most recently, Seek Higher Ground, the natural solution to our urgent flooding crisis. Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, Rob, I'm thrilled to be here.
Before we dig into the book, Tim, I wonder if you could talk some about wetlands. I mentioned that newly passed law here in Wisconsin aimed at boosting them. Is that an important part of flood prevention and mitigation?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, wetlands are the sponges of the earth. You know, they soak up flood waters and delay their release into the rivers and ultimately the ocean. So protecting wetlands is super important to do. And the more that we can do, the less flood damage we will have.
In Seek Higher Ground, you give kind of your origin story of your interest in floods and rivers because you're a survivor of a flood, the Hurricane Agnes flood of 1972. Can you tell us what you saw there that inspired you to take this on as an issue for the next 40 plus years?
Yeah. Well, I was living in a small Appalachian village at the time on a tributary to the West Branch of the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania. And, you know, all it did was rain for 3 days, but this was the center of the Hurricane Agnes storm, which had moved up the West Coast, and then it had drifted offshore, picking up more water over the Atlantic, but suddenly turned inland again and hovered over Pennsylvania for 3 days. At the time, it was the most damaging flood in American history. I happened to be there, ground zero of the storm. The water came up and up and up. It almost flooded my house, not quite, but it was close, and I ended up helping neighbors and, helping my town. And as soon as I could get out, which I couldn't do for like 3 or 4 days because bridges were out, landslides were down, the water was raging. As soon as I could get out, I went back to my job, which was working as the environmental planner for Lycoming County, Pennsylvania. And there, my task was not only to figure out how we could recover from this flood, but more importantly, how we could avoid this kind of catastrophic loss in the future. And that ultimately led me on the road that ended up with this book, Seek Higher Ground.
One big point you make in the book, Tim, is that we often live in a state of denial over flooding. We see flooding again and again, maybe in the same place over the years, over the decades, into geological time and beyond. But our attention spans get pretty short even after the last big one comes along.
Yeah, it's kind of a one-word description of the most common response to this problem, you know, denial. Right after the floods, you know, many people are motivated to do something different, but that typically fades in a few months or years at most. Whereas this problem is here to stay and it's getting worse. And what we've done in the past is not adequate. I mean, at best you would say it's inadequate. At worst, much of what we have done is misdirected. We relied way too heavily on building dams in an effort to stop floods from occurring, which we've not been able to do, and building levees in an effort to keep the floods away from our homes and businesses. And unfortunately, you know, dams and levees tend to work for small and medium floods, but not the really big ones, like in the Mississippi in 1993 and many other years. 93 was the great flood of American history, and 1,000 of 1,500 levees, major levees on the Mississippi basin, failed in that flood. So those were not adequate approaches, paying relief to people after the floods occur is not adequate. What we really need to do is try to eliminate this problem altogether. And we can do that if we stop development, new development on open space of floodplains that remains, and if we help people to relocate wherever they're willing to go.
I want to dig into those points in a bit, but actually you write that building lots of dams and levees gives people the confidence to build and develop and live in those floodplains, believing that they're safe and they may be from those lesser floods. In a way, building those dams and levees has made us more vulnerable to flooding.
Yeah, it's kind of a vicious cycle downward. You know, we have flood damage, so the Army Corps has built dams and people believe they're safe below them, so they build even more. But then the dams are inadequate, so we build more dams or more levees, you know, and more people move in. And ultimately, you might have imagined that this approach could have worked in the past. But now, and this is the reason I wrote the book when I did, now because of global heating, the floods are getting worse. So that approach has not worked in the past, and it's going to work even less in the future because we face floods that are more intense, more frequent, and more widespread in the years to come.
Tim Palmer is with us. We're talking about his new book. It's called Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tim, working toward a solution, you write, requires us in some ways to embrace what might feel like a really weird mindset, the idea that flooding is A, natural, and B, beneficial. In some ways, it's been a key part of allowing life on much of Earth. Could you talk about that mindset a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. There's a whole different side to this flooding coin. What we hear about so much is destruction and mayhem and loss. But in fact, floods are a natural part of what the Earth does. They are part of the hydrologic cycle, which goes back to the beginning of time. We all know it. The water evaporates over the ocean. The wind carries it over land. It rains and the water flows back to sea, sometimes in very great amounts. This has happened forever. And so all the natural systems of the Earth have adapted to that. And in fact, not only do they tolerate floods, but they benefit from floods. Floods aren't only inevitable, they are beneficial in the natural world, and in our world, if we could just stay out of the way of floods. For example, fish need floods. Fish need high water because that's what shapes the river channels in beneficial ways to them, creating both riffles and deep holes that are needed for cold water that's retained there. Floods are what wash sand out to our ocean beaches and form those beaches on our seacoast. So if you like the beach, you got to like floods. If you like fish, you got to like floods. Floods are what soak into the groundwater, replenishing it, and half of our public water supplies depend on groundwater. So if you want to get water out of that tap when you turn the faucet, you got to like floods. They're critical to the way the natural world works. And what we do can be very compatible with that if we just recognize and respected this natural system that we have.
That's not the way we've developed a lot over the years. We've built lots of housing and farmland, and the list goes on and on in floodplains, where it's right there in the name, floods sometimes happen. How do you turn that trend around?
Yeah, well, there are good ways to do that. Let me mention just a couple numbers that support that. Mm-hmm. 90% of our floodplain land is not heavily developed. It's farmland, it's wildland, it's forest, it's open space, or lightly settled land, 90%. So if we protect that land, the problem, we will prevent the problem from getting way, way worse than it already is. And another number, 7% of the land actually is floodplain. That leaves 93% that is not flood prone, and that includes a lot of other places to build. Certainly not all of that is suitable for building, but a lot of it is, and a lot of it is way more suitable than the floodplain land, you know, where we're at risk of loss and even hazards to life. So there are opportunities to go elsewhere. There is an opportunity to protect open space that remains. We need to do that through effective local zoning to protect the open space areas. Wisconsin has actually been a leader in this. And we need to support public programs of helping people to relocate off of the floodplain wherever they are willing to go. And again, Wisconsin has been a leader in that. Years ago in the 1970s and 80s, Wisconsin started as a statewide floodplain management program. They hired a very talented young hydrologist, Larry Larson, to run the program. Larry put together a great program and ultimately became the head of a group called the Association of State Floodplain Managers. It went from just a few people in the beginning to 20 chapters and 20,000 members across the United States. And these are the people in the state and local agencies that work toward better management of our floodplains. And much of that legacy of protection goes back to history in Wisconsin.
Tim Palmer is with us, writer, photographer, river conservation advocate. His new book is called Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you lived through a flood in your community? Did you relocate to higher ground in maybe Soldiers Grove, or some people moved and some government buildings moved in Gays Mills? Were you there for the Lake Delton dam burst or the 2018 floods across northern Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Tim Palmer about his new book, Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you live in a flood-prone area? Have you considered moving because of it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jay is with us in Washburn. Jay, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. And Tim, I really appreciate the subject and the discussion. I guess I'll say, as a fishery biologist who has studied riverine habitat for decades, I really appreciate your discussion on the fact that floods are essential for habitat. A lot of people think that floods are this extreme, really negative event, but they actually do a lot of good that people might not see. And then one thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if you cover this in your book or not, but the idea of flood frequency is something that I think people don't have a real strong understanding of. And up here in Washburn, we've had, I think, at least a couple of 500-year events in the last decade. And when people hear something about a 100-year flood, they think, well, you know, we're not going to have another one of these for 100 years. But then we have one 5 years later, and they think that the forecasts are wrong and that the forecasters don't know what they're talking about. But in fact, what's going on is there's a 1 in 100 chance of having that event in any given year. It's not a 100-year flood. It's a 1 in 100 chance, and I think people really need to understand that better.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, that's a big concern, I think, for us in the media, Tim, is how we interpret phrases like the 1,000-year flood, 500-year flood, and so on.
Yeah, may I comment on that, Rob?
Definitely. Please do.
Yeah, Jay, you nailed it. I mean, it is a 100-year flood is a 1% chance of flooding in any given year. Could happen this year, could happen next year. However, in the really long term, we should not be seeing 100-year floods happening, you know, 2 and 3 years in a row, or even once or twice every two decades. And so much of the mapping that has been done has not taken into account enough data. And when you think about it, a lot of these floodplain maps have been based on 50 years of data, or 100 is a whole lot, whereas the cycles of nature are much, much longer than that. And so we have not a whole lot of data to begin with. And now the flood frequency and intensity is increasing with global warming. And so the flood maps that were done, say, up until this point in time, really are no longer as accurate as they need to be, because the floods are getting worse. And so So these and other reasons mean that we need to have better floodplain mapping that more effectively relates to the kind of schedule flooding that we can expect in the future.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. We heard from Ed in Northern Illinois, who wanted to hear about the Great Flood of 1927, which he says killed thousands, affected millions of acres, and should scare the heck out of people. This is something you do talk about in the book, Tim. Remind us about the flood of 1927.
Yeah. This was especially severe on the lower Mississippi, you know, in the South. And it was the biggest flood up to that time. The 93 flood has eclipsed that since then, you know, not that long ago. But one of the really significant things about 1927 was up until then, Americans pretty much across the board regarded flooding as a local issue. You know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania flooded 18 times up till then. And yet the city was unable to get federal engagement in helping them deal with flood control. Now, you know, for better or worse, this idea of local responsibility was broadened by the 27 flood, where even Southern politicians, who typically had a very anti-federal attitude, and to this day do not want the federal government involved in almost anything they do except where federal benefits might be involved, even Southern politicians supported the national government becoming engaged in flood issues. And that led directly to the Flood Control Act of 1936, which also hammered the Upper Ohio Basin. So we then had this coalition of Northern and Southern interests to move Congress to act. And that law started the Army Corps of Engineers on building flood control dams. The approach still was not the right approach. You know, now we're launching a massive federal program to build dams wherever they possibly could be built. The Army Corps built 400 of these. We spent billions of dollars. The flood damage continued to get worse and worse and worse because we did not match that construction effort with the ideas I talk about in my book, which are protecting open space so the floods don't get, flood damage doesn't get worse, and helping people relocate to just get away from the problem and be done with it.
Tim Palmer is with us. We're talking about his new book, Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. People might hear that idea of relocating and think, I don't want to leave my town, my house to move somewhere else. How do you overcome opposition to this idea of relocation as a flood solution?
Yeah, well, first of all, Rob, I don't know of any floodplain management programs today that require people to move. They are all, to my knowledge, oriented toward helping people move when they want to go. And it turns out a lot of people want to go. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, every year gets far more requests for funding assistance to help people who want to move off of the floodplain into safer terrain than they are able to pay for. So no one's making people move. A lot of people do want to move. And typically, you know, after you're flooded two or three or four, or let's say five or 10 times, people want to go. You know, they recognize that this is futile. They keep rebuilding and they keep, you know, encountering these problems over and over. Here are two amazing numbers. My book is full of data, but let me just mention two numbers here. The Natural Resources Defense Council cranked thousands of data points on this, on the issue of federal spending for flooding. And they found that for every $1.70 that the federal government spends helping people move and get away from the flood problem, we, the federal taxpayers, spend $100 helping people to stay and endure the next flood. And we do that through funding assistance to quote, flood-proof their houses, even though there really isn't any such thing. We pay enormous subsidies for federally backed flood insurance, a program that now has a $24 billion deficit, and other programs of federal assistance that go in an extremely lopsided manner toward helping people stay and be flooded again rather than to move and solve the problem. So that ratio of federal spending, in my way of thinking, needs to be reversed so that we give more attention to helping people get away from the problem and not have it anymore.
And just our last less than a minute now, Tim, you also share a vision for what land on floodplains could look like, greenways that we still can use and appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, greenways are one of the most popular public initiatives nationwide. Everybody loves parks along rivers with trail systems and with access for boating and fishing and swimming and hiking or just sitting and watching the river flow if you want to do that. And when we reclaim these areas that have been developed on floodplains and convert them into municipal parks, that's what people get. And these programs are extremely popular. You know, I visited a number of them in the book, like in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Nashville, Tennessee, and Wycoming County, Pennsylvania. And, you know, when we can make this transition to protecting open space that remains and converting developed areas, usually lightly developed areas, into parkland, we end up creating these wonderful community assets that everybody loves.
We'll leave it there. Tim, thanks again for joining us today.
Great to be with you. I hope you people enjoy the book.
That's Tim Palmer, writer, photographer, former land use planner, and river conservation advocate. He's written more than 30 books on environmental issues. He's with us for a look at his latest book. It's called Seek Higher Ground, The Natural Solution to Our Urgent Flooding Crisis. If you have a story about how you or your community reacted after a flood, did you see improvements made, people moving away from those most flood-prone areas, for example, let us know about it. You can email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.